Hello and a warm welcome to the debate on Press TV. We're coming from our Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Yellow Vest protesters had promised to keep rallying into the new year, and that's what they did today. The AIDS protest was held in defiance of the government, dismissing protesters as agitators and hardliners. Now, this may indicate a tougher stance against the movement. It's not fuel price hikes that they are protesting against anymore. Macron's concessions have not appeased them either. The protesters are questioning the state of democracy in the country now and asking for more. Macron's popularity rate has also plunged to record lows. How much longer are the protests likely to go on? What should the government do in order to quiet the tense situation? First, let's watch a background report and then we'll debate the protests in France.
The first weekend of 2019 and the eighth consecutive weekend of anti-government protests. The Yellow Vest protesters say it's their New Year's resolution to keep rallying until their demands are met. They insist that the president should resign. They believe that Emmanuel Macron is in fact the president of the rich and has no idea what ordinary people are going through.
We've had enough of being dragged around by those in power who look down on us, who look down on people, who trample all over us, and Macron who says we're nothing, that we're a crowd full of hate.
In Paris, the rally turned violent. Gendarmes fired tear gas in an attempt to disperse the angry crowd, but just like the previous weeks, they were unsuccessful. Similar rallies also took place in other cities like Bordeaux, Nantes, Rouen, and Nice, and clashes were reported in several other cities. A government spokesman has denounced those participating in the rallies, calling them hardliners and agitators who only want to bring down the government. President Macron's approval rating is at rock bottom, while the latest opinion polls show that 55% of the French people support the Yellow Vest protesters. The rallies started in mid-November as a simple protest against planned fuel hikes, but soon morphed into mass demonstrations against Macron and his policies. Macron initially refused to make any concessions, but in mid-December, after weeks of violent protests, he scrapped the planned fuel tax rises. Facing with the biggest political crisis of his 20-month presidency, he even promised extra cash for minimum wage earners and tax cuts for pensioners. But protesters say this is not enough.
We have been tightening our belt for 15 or 20 years. We have had enough. We're still in an era of nobles and serfs in 2019.
Weeks of violent protests have cast doubt on the young president's ability to push forward with his so-called business-friendly economic reforms. At first, he invited the protesters to dialogue. But in his New Year's message, Macron branded the protesters as a hate-filled mob and vowed to maintain law and order. As the protests rumble on, the government has hardened its stance against the grassroots movement. But protesters are also digging in over their demands, making it hard for the government to quell the anger that is simmering on the streets across France.
Now, with that report by my colleague, Emmanuel Grashman, let's begin today's debate. Let's see who we have joining us today. We'll have journalist and commentator Catherine Schachtem from London and columnist and political commentator Neil Bradley, who's joining us from Paris. Thank you for being in this debate. Beginning with Catherine Schachtem, President Macron has vowed to push ahead with his reforms. And as you know, Yellow Vest protesters insist that he should resign. What can you predict about the outcome of France's protest movement?
It's a very difficult one because I think it's the first time in a very long time that you have such a rally in France that's actually holding on to the test of time. A lot of the time it kind of fizzled out and people tend to go home. And what you have now in the streets, not just of Paris but across France, is the rallying of the working class and the middle class to some extent. And that is a powerful force indeed in France when it comes to political capital. So it's very difficult to predict what President Macron is going to do. I think he is in a very difficult position because on the one hand, I think hard economics warrant some degree of reform. And of course, it's going to be very painful for the French to digest. But at the same time, he has to kind of, you know, I would say cater to his demographic and ensure that, you know, the people do have a say in the formulation of policies. So it's very difficult now for President Macron to kind of wriggle his way out, because he's literally stuck in between, in between two impossibilities for him. He cannot give up his reforms because he sees it as the way forward. But at the same time, he has to abide by his mandate and actually serve the people he was elected to serve. It's very difficult, and I could see France evolve into a civil war potentially should the military be called upon, as the president threatened to do so. So it's very difficult, because I doubt the military would actually fire upon his own, you know, its own people. I think we could see a regime change possibly, maybe enter a sixth republic in France. Reforms will need to be made, I think, on a very, very deep level, not just cosmetic, but institutional. So we'll see.
All right, let's go to Paris to Neil Bradley. Neil, what options does Macron have to quell the protests?
Very few. We got an interesting clue in the middle of this week. You might know there's another scandal going on in France involving Alexandre Benalla, who was an aide to Macron, until he was officially fired last May, after he was caught being out on the street posing as a police officer, beating protesters during May Day protests, labor protests. This came up again this week because it turns out that he was never fired. He was discreetly given a diplomatic passport and traveled with Macron internationally, most recently in Chad in Central Africa, in order to set up arms deals between French corporations and the governments in Central Africa. The reason I bring this up is because he went on television to defend himself, and in the process of defending himself, stood up for Macron, who he said he trusts. Rumors are they're very, very close friends. He says he trusts him, and he also spoke up for Macron by saying that Macron has to put up with, quote, phenomenal BS from people behind the throne, behind the obvious power in France, and that France is effectively a curatorship. Now, that's a polite way of saying an oligarchy or a dictatorship, I suppose. But it's an interesting use of the word he used, because Macron has no option but to follow through with the agenda that his backers, the people who made him king, the real kingmakers in France, he has to follow through. He said he will. Maybe he does empathize with the protests and would like to fundamentally change France in the direction they're proposing. But who knows what blackmail or what kind of metaphysical gun they have to his head, but he must continue with the policy that they demand, these powerful backers, whoever they are.
Mm-hmm. All right, Catherine, protesters argue that Emmanuel Macron is the president of the rich. He has no idea whatsoever what ordinary people are going through. How true is this conviction of theirs?
Well, I think this stems from the fact that he's an economist and he's part of what the French would consider the intellectual elite. He's not necessarily from a very rich background, but certainly the high middle class. And I think that the fact that he moves in the very higher financial circles, for example, the United States, when he was just an employee then, has kind of added to this image that he's out of touch with the working class. And to an extent, I think he is, because he looks upon, you know, France's economy from a very European perspective, European lens, and he sees the globality as opposed to what, you know, people might suffer through short terms when it comes to reform. At the same time, I think that he's right in wanting to reform France economically, France is to actually move into, you know, the next decade and remain strong in terms of the social services that it's offering its people currently, and it cannot continue as it is. You know, people want to pay less taxes but have, you know, more access to social benefits, while the working class is kind of shrinking, and so contribution to the tax system are waning. So it's difficult to sustain a system as such. So reforms need to happen. I'm not sure that he knows how to formulate them in a way that the French would understand. The French are quite capable of going through quite a tightening of the belt if they feel that it's necessary and that there's a justification for it. And I think that the communication has been made very poorly, and the French are quite fed up. So he's, I think, in a way, inheriting the issue that haven't been dealt with, you know, during the past decades, and it's coming to a boiling point where everything that has gone wrong in France in, let's say, the past 50 years is actually being pinned on him because the people do not like him and consider him as being a king, which is quite interesting because France is in a way in a very similar situation to that of the 1830s when the French created the barricade and kind of moved away from the monarchy to yet another kind of monarchy, but shaped up a little bit differently. So I think that what the people are calling for regime change, they're calling for a new constitution to be set up. I think there's a very strong desire for France to take a new direction, especially when it comes to foreign policy, which is very interesting. The French do not want to continue to pay for the kind of ambition or worldly ambition that a lot of the elites, the political and financial elite, has had over the past decades, namely, for example, in the Middle East, involving the military to pursue very financial gains. So I think France is seeing a move towards socialism, but at the same time, a rise in nationalism. So it's a little bit worrying because the mix in the 1930s wasn't that good with Germany, so I would not like to see a repeat of that. But at the same time, there are so many issues in France, including immigration, that haven't been dealt with in the right way. There's a lot of very latent anger towards many issues, and it's very worrying because if a vacuum should happen, we could see rise a very nefarious figure in France's politics to kind of offer quick answers to the people. It's very worrying. On the one hand, Macron is not a bad politician, but I don't think he knows how to sell himself, and there is a great degree of not knowing how to convey a popular image to his presidency, and he's a little bit out of touch. But he's not gone just yet, so he might try to turn the table around in his favor. Mm-hmm. It's possible.
Right. Neil, Paris is calling the protesters hardliners who want to topple the government. Is this meant to undermine the grassroots movement, which is drawing in supporters from people from all walks of life?
Absolutely, absolutely. In Macron's New Year's speech last year, 2018, he said that this would be the year that France would become reunited all over again. Well, what a turnout it's been. Yes, France has been united all over against Macron, by Macron. This year, his New Year's speech was, it's already been cited a couple of times, but listen to the full expression that was used. He described the Gilets Jaunes as a hateful crowd who have lashed out at elected politicians, security forces, journalists, Jews, foreigners, and homosexuals. Now, this language has been repeated throughout the media before and since his New Year's speech. This is the canard that this is a far-right extremist backlash against the left or the establishment. It's obviously much more than that, but it's a clearly appointed reference to some of the key issues that people are up in arms about. And one of them, obviously, is the one that Macron was taking center stage over when he flew to Marrakesh to sign the UN Migration Compact. At the same time that Paris was arguably in the peak of the riots in early December, this canard has been pushed nonstop by the French media. Oh, that this is a horrible scene and that we're on the verge, potentially, of a return to the 1930s in Europe. It's not like that at all. It's much more like it's much more like the revolutions of 1848, when there were uprisings like this all across Europe, including in France. 1848 is an interesting year because the core political fundamental change that the protesters want is the introduction of popular referenda. They want people to be able to propose referenda to change laws, to amend the constitution, and to fire politicians, particularly those who are in government positions as ministers. There's one country in Europe that has had this in place since that last round of great upheaval in Europe. It's France's neighbor, Switzerland. Since 1848, it has this measure. The French people are saying, we want this form of direct democracy in our country also. And yes, it's nationalist. It's also socialist, because the national is the social at the end of the day. The two are not in conflict here.
Now let's go to London, to Catherine. President Macron has offered a number of concessions in order to appease the protesters, like increasing the minimum wage and also removing tax on overtime hours. Well, that seems to have failed to silence voices of dissent. Why is that?
Because it's not enough. As I was saying before, the French have suffered for decades now. Every time Their buying power has diminished. They have seen, they have suffered quite a great deal economically, and they feel that they haven't been heard for great many years. And I think it's coming to, to the form of explosion now of anger, where they're quite fed up with politicians and state officials, and they do not believe that €100 a month will make any real difference. And I don't think that it will. So it's costing a lot of money to the treasury in France, but it's not really manifesting any of the goals that is supposed to kind of convey, which is to address public anger. The people are still angry, and until we address that anger and actually the why behind the anger, President Macron's not going to go anywhere. The problem is, it would take a lot of political courage to actually address the deeper issues in France, and I think it will take more than just reform. It would take a restructuring of France's institution. And the way that even it conceptualize its economy and its duty to its people as far as the social benefits are concerned. So, and I don't think that President Macron can or want to do that. I think we're in a way in a situation very similar again to the 1960s, where people literally exploded into the street and said enough is enough. They wanted the voices of the people to be heard and for the government to actually represent the wishes of the people, as opposed to what their politics wanted or commanded. So it's again, I think it's a very tense, very difficult situation, and it could potentially actually spread out to the rest of Europe. I mean, we have seen that before. I know that a lot of experts have compared the Arab Spring to what is happening in France right now, where I think there's such a dichotomy and a divide in between the people's wishes and what officials are actually manifesting in terms of politics. How many times have we seen the people rise up in anger and politicians largely ignoring them? And I think that to some extent, I would say that President Macron is a victim of his environment, and that he's maybe hanging out a bit too much with President Donald Trump. His style of governance is actually rubbing off on him in not a good way, because he's dismissing the people, being standoffish and coming across as arrogant. This is not a good thing in France, because France is not America, and the French have a very different view of what a president should look like or how he should act. And the fact that popular legitimacy underpins the presidency, the office itself, it's not a good thing for Macron right now, because if the people disengage with him, that he's losing all legitimacy, and essentially his presidency will be rendered null and void. He needs to be careful. There's a really real possibility that he would go. I don't know what that would mean for France moving forward, but it's I don't think that unless things change dramatically now, that he's not going to survive his mandate. Mm-hmm.
Now, Neil, protesters took to the streets during the time. Most of them are usually on holiday. What does this indicate, and how much longer are the protests expected to go on and amid police heavy-handed tactics used against them?
Right. Well, that surprised me that they kept up the protests throughout the holidays. It's gotten much colder in France as well. That has not stopped them at all. The official numbers for today, I don't believe it. They said that 3,500 people gathered in Paris, and that overall in the country there were 25,000 protesters. I think there were 25,000 protesters in Paris alone today. What's interesting is that today they went to the National Assembly on the Seine River. At least they tried to. They tried to cross the bridge to protest in front of the Assemblée Nationale. They were blocked by riot police on the bridge. And for a moment there, it reminded me of that scene from Egypt, from Cairo in 2011. You remember that? And the police and the protesters stood off on that bridge, and it looked like the police had initially held them back, but then suddenly it shifted, and they were fleeing, and the people were crossing the bridge. We almost had that kind of a scene today.
That's right.
I mean, when it gets to that point, it gets to the point of, let's say, a de facto revolution, where there is a crisis, the military must come out. Obviously, as Catherine mentioned, it's not clear how the military will respond to such a situation, but we're still super, super close to a situation where the military may be required to tame an actual full-blown revolution. Because the police are saying, and I have no reason not to believe them, that they are really tired, their resources are extremely stretched at the moment, just trying to cope with the relatively lower numbers of protesters who haven't changed one bit in their determination to see this through and to see fundamental change in France.
Okay, Catherine, what is the Paris government likely to do in the face of the ongoing protest rallies engulfing the country?
Well, again, I think that the only resort that President Macron has right now at hand is to actually call on to the military. I mean, President Sarkozy, for example, during the riots in Paris did so, and it worked out. Now, the issue with the military, and it's a big one, it's a really huge gamble, is that traditionally, for example, in the situation of Sarkozy, you had the military acting in the suburbs. And I know it's going to sound very racist, but the French are quite elitist, and there is some latent racism there. So the military didn't have so much of an issue to operate in the suburb because they very much consider the people they were trying to control to be immigrants in the first place and not so much French nationals per se. And so the issue wasn't so much as the military versus the French, but the military trying to handle an issue that was of national security. Now, when it comes to the yellow vest, you have, you know, the I would say, like, you know, France's core, the working class, the middle class, and they're very much perceived by the military as being basically them. You know, their fellow nationals. And historically speaking, the military does not like to move against its own people. And I could see a situation where should Macron call upon his general to actually act against the French and shot be fired, I could see general actually, you know, reneging on the president and actually defecting and maybe formulating a coup d'etat against President Macron. It has happened before. I wouldn't be surprised that could happen should Macron actually call for violence against the French.
All right. We're running out of time. Neil, your final thoughts on this. 30 seconds, please.
This isn't going away, obviously. If it survived the cold winter, it's going to turn into at least a French spring this spring, maybe a European one. It's super interesting. It's super dangerous as well. These things can flip and turn violent. In really uncontrolled ways. But for now, it remains a largely peaceful protest that is being suppressed violently by the state. And this week, they've begun arresting so-called leaders, spokespeople of the movement. And that's obviously only going to increase the anger. Something has to yield here. It's not the government so far. We shall see.
All right. Thank you for your comments. We had journalist and commentator Catherine Shackton from London and columnist and political commentator Neil Bradley, who joined us from Paris. And I should also thank you, the viewers, for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.